Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for business owners and investors looking to protect their assets, save on taxes, and build their wealth with Michael Bowman, an attorney, author, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Michael Bowman. I'm one of the partners here at Anderson Business Advisors, and I'm filling in for Toby Mathis. He is taking some much-needed R&R, and so I'm here with Jeff Webb, the director of our tax department. Hey, Jeff.
Hey. As you can see, we are not Tony and Toby. I can't even remember the guy's name.
No. My take might be a little bit different from what you guys are used to. I'd love to get into some of the structure implementation type questions and get into the tax code. I'm one of those guys that love the tax code, and I don't look at it as restrictions. I look at it as a playbook. These are all gifts that were given to us. And so, you know, I'd like learning about it. I think that knowledge is power when we're talking about taxes. I think the more you know, the more that you're able to go ahead and make sure that the two schools of logic, and the more you know, the more tools you're going to have to be successful. And so, you know, I think there's two tax codes, one for the informed, one for the uninformed. And so by you guys joining this, you guys are part of the informed crowd. And so you guys are able to take advantage of the tax code as opposed to being taken advantage by the tax code. Let's get in here. So if you guys want, you can go ahead and follow us on social media. We love interacting with you guys on social media. Here's all of the different social media sites and how to get a hold of us. The one thing that I really encourage you guys all to do is to go ahead and watch our YouTube videos. We spend a lot of time in going through and creating content. We're different from most law firms. Most law firms want to keep their knowledge to themselves. Here at Anderson, and it's been something that's from the incorporation of Anderson, a theory of ours. If we have educated clients, that means that we're able to synergize better with our clients. I don't know about you, Jeff, but I love getting on the phone with a client who understands these concepts, who's been to our events, and we do synergize. We come up with different strategies, and they're saying, hey, well, what about this? And then we take a look at that strategy and say, yeah, you can do this, but why don't we tailor it this way and this way? What's your opinion on that, Jeff?
No, I agree with that, Michael, that a smart client and a informed client is a lot easier to work with.
If I can put my mic down so you can hear me. It's just so much easier to work with. We also learn occasionally something new from our clients, especially when they're doing extensive research on something that we rarely run across, but it's good for everybody. So we're more than happy to help educate our clients, and we always get something back from that.
You know, don't you think sometimes we act like janitors too? We have to clean up a lot of the online information and incorrect information that's given by other professionals.
Yeah, we do. As a matter of fact, we were doing some research yesterday, and if you just Google it, you could find a couple different answers that didn't agree with each other. So yeah, there is some bad information out there. And another part of the problem is there's some old information out there. Things have changed recently. And while that information might have been accurate in 2017 or 2010, it's not accurate anymore.
Yeah, the tax code changes, and it seems like it's evolving fairly quickly, especially nowadays with all the new acts being passed and changes to the code. You know, one of the things that we, for the longest time, was a medical deduction, you know, 7.5 of the AGI, then it went to 10% of the AGI, and, you know, then it's back, and it's, you really have to stay abreast, or at least know someone who's, keeping up their knowledge. Just got a hello from a client, longtime client, Sherry. Great to see you on this. I think I've known Sherry for probably 15 years now. It's been kind of crazy. So good to see, long-term clients on this podcast. So we got the social media. Let's look at some of the rules. Ask live, and we'll try to get to the questions, or at least one of the advisors that are on the chat and actually answer that question for you. Tax questions are interesting because all of a sudden we look at it may seem easy with first blush, but then you start looking at the actual tax question And it's the if then, then this and that. And so sometimes we need a little more information, or it's a question that pertains to you individually. We'll filter those questions out. But for the most part, I think Jeff can agree with this, is that we really want to get to you guys information. You know, if it's a detailed response and analysis, you know, we do have a section of Anderson. It's in our Platinum porthole, and it's our Platinum membership. It's great because when we developed Platinum, one of the reasons for us to develop Platinum is we realized our clients and our past lives as litigation attorneys, clients really didn't want to pay the $750 an hour to get a question. So what they would do is they'd phone a friend. They would research on the internet, like Jeff and I were just talking about, get wrong answers, go down the path, and then sometimes lock themselves into something that wasn't accurate. File something that we'd have to undo, or we'd have to clean up the path, or we even worse, we'd look at what they did, and they paid too much in taxes from a sale of a property, an asset, or what have you, or filed an incorrect tax return. You know, at times, yeah, we can go ahead and file an amendment, but the big thing on that is, you know, it's just unnecessary expenditures. And so what we did was we saw it as a barrier to our clients, the billable hour, and so we looked at our clientele. Decided that, hey, if we do a membership where everyone joins together, pitches in, it's right now it's, you know, $35 a month, that we can get you guys the answers and help you guys out. So if it is a detailed response, become a member of Platinum and we'll get you squared away there. So another thing, this is going to be fast, fun, and educational. Again, presenting in a limited amount of time, I always hate. You know, we are, you know, generally presenting for 3 days, a 1 day, full day. In fact, coming up, we have a tax and AP event. It's a 1 day event. We're going to be rolling out some new strategies, but also some new programs. It's this Saturday. I will give you guys a link. Everyone on this is going to be invited to it, and I'll give you guys a link that you can register. And for taking your time out to be on Tax Tuesday, we'll go ahead and comp your fee to get in. It's going to be free to get in. And so I would really highly recommend, if you haven't attended a Tax and AP event before, you know, join us, because there is a ton of information, ton of, you know, strategies. One of the things I hate doing is seeing people overpay in taxes. And it happens way too often. So we're going to be teaching you some tax strategies, asset protection strategies, and also business planning tailored into estate planning. You know, one of the things that's important to me is the estate plan. I believe everyone should have a living trust. Don't let anyone tell you that you don't need a living trust, that you don't have enough assets. That's not accurate. Living trust, the purpose of a living trust, in my opinion, is to keep family relationships intact. And to make them just make sure that whatever's happening, you know, at that time when the stress with the family, that make it as easy on your family as possible. It seems that we have a problem when someone passes, grieving and greed go together. And so we want to make sure that everything's outlined. And with the majority of our clients have worked so hard sacrificing and building wealth that I really hate seeing it being squandered away to attorneys, court processes, and destroying family relationships. So please, if you guys this Saturday sign up, you know, join us for the one full day of tax and asset protection with one of my senior associates, Carl Zollner, and myself. And I do have to tell you guys that there is a small chance, but we never know when babies are born. But my wife and I are expecting a baby girl this week or the next. And the ETA has not been established yet. As most of you guys know, you can't tell when they're going to come. So, you know, most likely I'm going to be on there with Carl. If not, one of our other attorneys will join Carl and get that. But I highly recommend you guys signing up for the 1 day tax and asset protection. So looking into the questions. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the questions that we're going to be covering, and this will help you guys to see what's coming up. And if you guys have questions pertaining it, then we can go and expound a little bit more and take some of your questions and really, really dive into these topics. I chose a lot of these questions. Some of them were chosen by other tax professionals in our firm, and I chose them because in my years of experience with dealing with business owners in litigation, I felt like a lot of people have the same questions. And so I tried to choose as many questions that were relevant to helping you guys succeed in investing in business altogether. So the first question, does it make sense to use an LLC as a property manager for self-managed rentals? What are the pros and cons? This is going to be a fun one. What we want to do is, again, take you guys to the next level. When we look at a structure, we really need to attack it from a four-pronged approach. Number one, asset protection, because we can save on taxes, but if we don't have the assets because we lost in a lawsuit, there's not much to save there. Number two, we do want tax minimalization. And if you guys heard me, I said minimalization, not elimination. And then business planning. Business planning, really, it needs to blend in with asset protection and with tax. Far too often I've seen people put together a great structure from an asset protection standpoint or a tax standpoint, and then they're not able to get funding and build their business. That we run into that quite a bit. The CPA is very excited that the client's paying little or no taxes, and all of a sudden they go to try to get funding, and the bank or the financial institution says, "Hey, wait, you're broke. You make no money. We're not going to lend to you." And so it really hampers the development of their enterprise. And so we want to develop into make sure you guys can build your business also. And then, unfortunately, we're all going to pass. And so the fourth prong that I always love to talk about is estate planning. How do we pass it on to our heirs and really help them to build on what we built? And again, keep family relationships from being destroyed. The next one, if I put my property into a land trust, will it be difficult to sell? I love this question because it's practical. Again, we got to have structures that allow us to build our business. And so if we put in a structure and then we can't sell the property, or it makes it more difficult to sell a property, it's just we're kind of taking two steps to go back one. And then what's the best entity to do wholesaling? What we want to do, again, look at that from a business planning standpoint, but also a tax and asset protection standpoint. If we have, this is a great one. Jeff, you can kind of give a 2-second answer on this, but I love this because I think the answer is going to be surprising to most people. It says, if we just have one duplex investment property, would TurboTax be good enough, or is a CPA needed to get more tax benefits? What do you think, Jeff, really quickly?
It depends.
I love that answer, and it actually really does. We'll go over the pros and cons. I think the answer is going to surprise a lot of you in how we feel and what we think. All right, how do we report the sale of the rental that is owned by our 401k and 70% by us? Excellent question. I'm seeing a lot more of our clients team up with their 401k, team up with other people's retirement accounts. And so there's a couple of things that I know I want to go over. I'm sure Jeff has exponentially more logic and reason go behind how do you want to set that up and how do you want to go ahead and report that sale. What tax strategies should a startup real estate investor be aware of and plan ahead of time? When I saw this question, I loved this question because, again, sometimes we get it when it's too late in the game or that we weren't able to get it from the very beginning. And, the horse has left the barn in some cases. And so tax planning, those of you who are involved with Anderson, we really stress tax planning. That's why we do the education. That's why we have our platinum membership and titanium memberships. And it's so that you guys come to us and that we can do planning as opposed to doing planning, I guess, or dealing with taxes December 31st or April 14th. That's what I've seen in the past. I have an S Corp. When I pay myself, am I responsible for payroll taxes? We'll dive into that. How to, I love S corporations and in some, business avenues. And so, definitely. We'll get into how to do it, why to do it, and how to maximize tax savings with an S corporation and self-employment tax. How do I set up a manager-managed LLC to protect the member-managed LLC I've had since 2013? That's going to be a good one because what we want to do is make sure that we gain privacy also. And sometimes that's difficult to do if it's already set up. We'll show you how to do that. Moving along, I sold my business and have $100,000 capital gains tax due. And I love that. Congratulations on building a business and selling the business. Can I invest in real estate and offset it with a depreciation credit? Excellent question. We really have to match types of income and expenses and the deductions. We have to make sure that it's all congruent. Can I use my 529 to pay for room and board if I own my house with a mortgage? I love the way you guys are thinking outside the box. How can I benefit from some of these tax programs? And we'll get into that. And then is there a way to pre-plan and calculate the tax implications of the sale of a residential property? For example, depreciation recapture and how to go ahead and get that. Oh, I love self-storage. I have a self-storage business in Virginia, and I'm looking to expand and purchase another facility in Tennessee. What is the ideal structure I should use for this business and real estate investing? We will get into that. I actually took a slide out of the presentation that we're going to be going over on Saturday because it's really congruent. Not only do I want to show you the structure, but I also want to show you how it's going to be relevant towards retirement too. And we'll liken it unto how we can maybe capitalize on a business that we built and still sell it. It's one of my favorite strategies, you know, for brick and mortar businesses and also service businesses. When transferring my LLC to my, or transferring, I must say, assets from my name to my LLC name, tax consequences with a question mark. We're going to talk about that. Depends, like Jeff says. What's the difference between a tax deduction and a tax credit? I actually, you guys didn't even come up with that. I actually wanted to turn it down, turn it back to basics and get you guys to understand the difference between a tax deduction and a tax credit. It's a foundation to really being tax wise, understanding the difference, what gives you more bang for the buck. And then, you know, I wanted to go over my favorite tax deductions and then Jeff, his favorite tax deductions and tax credits. So that's what we're going to be covering. And so what I want you guys to do is put on your seatbelts and let's get going. All right, here, I promised you guys the link for Saturday's conference. Again, we're going to be rolling out two new programs, a couple new strategies, and also giving you guys a great foundation going forward. I love this course. It's my favorite course to teach. Because what we're doing is we're taking people who and investors and business owners, and we're building them a foundation so that they understand it from a tax-wise standpoint, asset protection, business planning, and estate planning. Carl Zollner, he's a serial entrepreneur. He understands it. He's also been in litigation himself, with a business. He understands why you do things from a practical standpoint, and he also is a top when you look at academia too. And so, it's going to be fantastic. And so there it is. Go and sign up. Again, there's offers that we make during the tax and asset protection events that aren't available anywhere else. And again, we're rolling out two new programs. So go to that. And I'll put this back up later on. But I wanted to kind of give you guys a little heads up. Moving right along. All right. Let's look at this first one. Does it make sense to use an LLC as the property manager for self-managed rentals? What are the pros and cons? Let me look at it from a asset protection standpoint. I grabbed this slide, and what we want to do is we want to look at, and then we can get into some of the tax savings and tax benefits from doing it. When we're looking at our rentals, we really want to separate and isolate. Many of you guys have attended our tax and asset protection event. This is the stuff that we're going to be covering and maximizing tax savings by protecting the assets. If you look at the structure that's in front of you, the C corporation would be our management company. And so what we're able to do is manage the active side of the business and manage, and I'm going to say not manage the rental properties themselves, but manage the LLCs. And that's where sometimes I read articles, I hear other professionals, I have to correct some of my staff too, is, hey, I don't want you to say managing the actual properties, it's managing the affairs of the LLCs. And one of the things, some of the duties that corporation is going to do for the LLC is it's going to manage the day-to-day affairs, it's going to collect rent, it's going to do repairs, or at least contract for a company to do the repairs. And then also, bookkeeping and it does all these services. I would also put in there that it's going to do an analysis of the investment, making sure that it's pulling the return on investment properly. And so this is, you really have to broaden it out into management. Jeff, in your experience in using a corporation to manage the LLCs that have rental properties in them, what are some neat things from a tax-wise standpoint?
Well, for me, it's the only entity that really makes sense. It can be an LLC taxed as a C corporation, or I actually prefer a really Inc. to be the corporation, primarily because You may build up losses in this from some of the other deductions you can run through this corporation, whether it be at corporate meetings, mileage, any number of things. But like you said, though, it's important that you make sure that it is running the LLC, not the property. In fact, you may have a property manager who is maintaining the properties for you. So the C corporation would still be overlooking the entire LLC for each property that you have.
Like a contractor with a bunch of subcontractors, right?
Right. So I do like having the Inc. and rather than the LLC, should you one day decide to dissolve it and have the corporation still owes you quite a bit of money. It's a way to at least get some kind of deduction for it. So I do really like that part.
And this is something that gets our clients' friends in trouble. I hear, you know, clients' friends, the client comes to a tax and AP and says, they learn these strategies, and then they tell their other real estate investors friends or their business friends, you know, they tell them, hey, you know what, you can put together a corporation, it can manage the LLCs, each individual LLC is going to pay a fee to that corporation, and then you spend it out on expenses. You know, the client's friend hears this, and the problem what happens is they don't put together an agreement. They don't outline the duties. So if you are going to have a corporation manage the LLCs, and this is going to go for normal businesses too, if you're going to do this, you actually need an agreement. In our Platinum portal, there's the management agreement, there's services agreements, but I want an actual written agreement out with the duties that the corporation is going to be performing for the LLC. I really do. Would you agree? I mean, you know, from a substance standpoint, if you got scrutinized, that's going to go a long way, right, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, that management agreement puts in writing why you're collecting money from these LLCs, what this income is for in the C corporation, and like you said, duties and responsibilities. Anytime we can have that, that's a question that we're not going to get back from IRS is what this relationship really is. Is that a lot of times we'll see that, well, I'm going to pay out a management fee of 100% of the income and stuff like that. And it needs to be a little more, for lack of a better word, a better commitment into what you're doing here. It allows you to do other things. Like we said, taking the mileage expenses, taking medical expenses,
All the juicy deductions that the C corporation allows you to have versus running everything out of your own name?
Correct. Now, you asked about tax consequences. We've seen people set up property management companies as partnerships or S corporations or even a Schedule C's, which make even less sense.
Yeah.
The problem with the partner, any of the pass-through entities, is you're just taking money out of one pocket, the rental properties, and just putting it in another pocket.
I'm so glad you said that. I have to clean this up all the time, even from other accountants. Clients sometimes they are married to their accountant and they've been their accountant for 100 years. And they say, well, put together an LLC, you know, to manage these. And again, you know, default for an LLC, we disregarded maybe a partnership, but then you're really limited. You're not going underneath the corporate tax code, which the Correct. Corporate tax code, you earn, you spend, and then you get taxed on what's left over.
Yes. And typically the way these are set up is there's enough expenses in the C corporation that it's offsetting most of your income coming from management fees.
Have you ever heard my gatekeeping acronym for expenses?
No, I have not.
CORN.
Okay.
Awkward silence right there, right? So I learned this from an old time accountant, really awesome guy. And you know, we were going over expenses and we were just talking how much fun they are. They like and how powerful each of these expenses are because it's decreasing the taxable revenue. And he said, oh, it's really easy. It's got to be customary, ordinary, reasonable, and necessary. Correct. And I thought to myself, that's genius because, you know, ordinary, necessary, I've heard that before, but, you know, really, you know, it boils down to a test before you spend something underneath a business standpoint. You know, is it customary in the line of business you're in? Is it ordinary, reasonable, and necessary? I think it keeps you out of, you know, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered, kind of a gatekeeping mechanism with expenses. I always like to say, would the president of IBM do it? Don't use Enron or Tiger. What was the big toy chain that they had golden toilet seats and all that stuff? I'm going to follow their line. Was it Tyco?
Probably.
Yeah.
Another point with these C corporations is when we talk about educational expenses. If you've been to some kind of seminar or you've signed up with another entity that's where you have a significant educational expenses, say $20,000, $30,000, $50,000, those are the type of expenses we would run through the C corporation because they are actually managing your real estate. So that education is actually belongs to C corporation. And that's in a place where we can actually deduct it without a lot of question marks from the IRS.
One of my favorite expenses and deductions, I'm an educational junkie. Not only do I have to take, and I don't like to say have to, but I love education. I think, that, you know, again, I take it for, you know, being an attorney, but I also invest in real estate, the stock market and business. And I think the more you know, the better off you are going to be. So, yeah, you know, when I found out that education was a business expense, I was overjoyed because now you're getting some, financial benefit also. I was very dismayed that under Publication 550 in the code section, that investment-related seminars generally are not tax deductible to an individual. And so we just move it over into the corporate realm, and now we got the deduction.
Correct.
All right. Pros and cons. The cons, you know, I don't really see many cons other than you might have another return, but you're also getting benefit from that return. One of the questions that I was scanning through the chat was, how many properties before it makes sense to go ahead and form that C corporation? And, you know, before you answer, I'll answer. And, I'm going to say it depends. And some of the factors I'm going to look at is, are you going to invest in more rental properties? Bottom line, how much in expenses are you, generating? Do you have? One of the things I don't want you guys to do is go ahead and not create a C corporation and then lose those expenses. You know, the other thing is we can capture those expenses and roll them over. Corporations can run at a loss. So that being said, what do you think?
I'm thinking if I only have one property that I'm renting out, maybe I don't do a management company for that. But then again, there's no reason not to. It's a cost benefit calculation. Like you said, there are going to be certain costs with setting up a corporation, filing tax returns, especially if you're in California, that's another return that you're going to have to pay fees on. But you're going to have annual fees on top of that. So you really have to look at what kind of benefit you're getting from the corporation. I don't think it's one size fit all. Do you, Michael?
Not at all. No, not at all. You know, not to keep going back to that. You know, these are all the questions that we're going to be answering during the tax and AP. You know, also, you know, join Platinum. These are the questions we'll go over with you when you're in Platinum. And then I had a question come up. Can a C-Corp manage a trading business? That is great because, yeah, a lot of times we actually do. Use a C corporation to manage a trading business. You got to set it up properly, but
our preferred method for the trading companies is maybe a limited partnership or an LLC where the corporation is the general partner or general manager of that LLC or partnership. They get a small percentage of profits and losses, but instead of a management fee, they get what is called a guaranteed payment.
Yes.
Because like you said before, the management fees for trading is no longer deductible personally.
Correct. And that's something that some of the trading accountants haven't been keeping abreast with. And I'm scared about their clients and that they're going to get audited and not be able to take what they thought they were going to be able to take. So let's keep going with the questions. One did come up. If a C corporation for active services isn't set up in Wyoming or Nevada, would the real estate properties be set up under separate LLCs in Wyoming or Nevada? I'm going to give us I don't have a lot of clarity here, but what we really want to do is making sure that whatever state we're doing business in, that we're at least having an operating business in that state. And so, you know, a lot of times we'll set up That question comes up. Do I use Wyoming or Nevada? Well, it's going to depend. But if you're touching and concerning citizens in a particular state, we need an entity that's doing business there, whether it's a land trust, a C corporation, or the actual LLC itself. Now, we'll be able to get the asset protection if we have those individual in-state LLCs. And I've got a picture of this coming up. For those individual in-state LLCs, you know, if they are all owned by a Nevada or Wyoming LLC. And so that comes from that. And again, here it is. All those in-state LLCs flow down to Nevada or Wyoming so that we can go ahead and get the asset protection, because Nevada and Wyoming are the strongest states in the nation when it comes to asset protection. What they've done is they've kept that charging order protection intact. And basically, for those of you who are new and haven't been through our courses, how that comes about is that if you get sued personally and you have ownership or membership in an actual LLC, the judgment creditor can't reach in and take those assets. What they can do is they get what we call a charging order. It's basically a lien against the interest, but they can't really get the assets as long as it's in a state that's kept it intact. Here's a question on land trusts. Land trusts are an awesome tool. It's almost like having your cake and eat it too, because you get the benefits without there's really no downside to it. For those of you who are unfamiliar with land trusts, again, this is going to be something we're going to be going over in our tax and AP on Saturday. The land trust is nothing more than a revocable trust. All 50 states allow for revocable trusts. And so with the trust, there's a grantor. So you own the property, you grant that asset into the land trust or the real estate into the land trust. You are the trustee, so you're in control. And then also the way we set it up, we make the LLC the beneficiary after it's called an assignment of beneficial interest. You as the trustee being in control, you can go ahead and sell the property. And so I prefer to go ahead and it depends on the institution, but I prefer to go ahead and just have the land trust sell the property. I don't see any negative aspects of it. What we do not want to do when we sell property is having what we call churn of title. We don't want a lot of people on, individuals or companies on the title, because it can spook the buyer. But from a tax aspect, any problems or any benefits you see with the land trust, Jeff?
No, it's actually kind of invisible to us. I will say one thing when you talk about churning of the title. I know FHA loans, FHA avoids certain loans that they see were recently purchased and then sold again. They avoid them like the plague. So
yep.
You may be hurting your own market by churning that title.
Yeah. All these things, again, please ask us these questions and let's get into your specific individual circumstance before we go down too far down. I'm always like sad when it comes down to a client's on the at closing or about to close and they've done something and now we got to figure out how to undo it and time is of the essence. Whether it's a personal property they're trying to sell, an investment property, a business, a quick turn or a flip, we really have to be careful with that. What is the best entity to do wholesaling? I really like doing wholesaling out of an LLC that's disregarded down to a corporation. You know, we do have a wholesale trust that we can use. Every situation's a little bit different, and it varies by state too. And so we have to be aware of those states that we want to use a land trust or a wholesale trust as opposed to a LLC. But here is the big one, and I'm going to tease you, and then I'll have Jeff really go into detail. The reason why I want at least the tax-paying entity being a corporation is to avoid what we call dealer status, where you're going in and you're actively dealing in real estate because of the negative aspects of that, from losing 1031 ability to do 1031 exchanges. Everything's taxed as earned active income. Then there's about five negative ramifications if you're tagged as a dealer. Are you in alignment with that, Jeff?
Yeah, I am. I prefer, like you said, the corporation or the LLC disregarded to the corporation. How do you feel about having an LLC if you're doing wholesale for each wholesale? Is that overkill or?
That's awesome. I love that you said that. Now, here's my problem, right? A lot of people say, oh, you're just wholesaling paper. Wait until one of those deals go bad and you can't get that, the end buyer, the person that you're moving that paper to or that contract to, they're not closing. And you've got four or five wholesales inside of that LLC. and you're liable because you're breaking the contract. You can't get specific performance. You don't have the money. There's damages that the seller is going to come after you for. And then you've got three or four wholesale deals. It could just be a nightmare. You know, again, we really need to take a look at it and make sure that we're not setting ourselves up for failure. But, you know, I like, if we had to just say something in a vacuum, I like the fact that we would go ahead and do each wholesale. We don't know what the problem with the property is. I know you're just turning a contract, but maybe we do a combination of, you know, a wholesale trust and an LLC. Again, the biggest thing I want to have happen is that it goes to the corporation. So the LLC is disregarded, or what we can say is owned by the corporation. And that's the ultimate taxpaying identity, because I don't want you guys to be taxed as a dealer. The other thing we lose, I mean, I gave you a couple 1031s, earned active income. The other thing we lose is the benefits of a installment sale, where if you get tagged as a dealer and you flip a property, you're going to have to pay it, you know, and you take a note back on it, you're going to have to pay the total profit right away, as opposed to as you earn it over time with an installment sale.
So. Yeah, I mean, if you wholesale a property and it turns into an EPA super site, everybody's getting sued. Your dog's getting sued.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's one of those things that black mold's the other one, right? I mean, like, mm-hmm. You know, if something comes up with that, you might as well, if you have things in your own name, you might as well just go ahead and be like, all right, I'm losing everything. So separate it out. Absolutely. Those Superfund sites, you know, any sort of black mold, environmental contamination is just deadly for an investor. All right. This is my favorite question that we're going to get into, because again, I think that we have, Jeff and I are very congruent in the way that we think. This question, if we just have one duplex investment property, would TurboTax be good enough, or is a CPA needed to get more benefits? Jeff, you're probably jaded with this question, but let's hear your opinion on this. I'm going to love this.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you up front, TurboTax is definitely good enough to do that, do the taxes for this property. But the real question is, are you, the individual, good enough to use TurboTax properly to get all the benefit that you should be? This really comes down to the same question that we have even for bookkeeping clients that want to do their own bookkeeping, and that may not be the best bet for them. They're not good at it. They're not good at that side, and it's better for them to hire somebody to do it. TurboTax is a good software. It's probably the most self-prepared software in use. We use some higher-end software, of course. But if you're going to be doing your own taxes, I'm going to tell you, you really need to keep up on tax laws, at least for that specific area that your investment is in.
Yeah, I mean, TurboTax, I really believe, has a time and a place, or at least a segment that is good. I mean, you know, people with situations where W-2s, and that's all they have. I mean, there's nothing else going into it, right? I mean, there's very little that a tax professional can do for a person who just has straight W-2 income. But you know, that's not our clientele. That's not the people who have taken time out to be on this podcast or that want to improve. So I would say that once you start getting into other investments, other ventures, you know, TurboTax, you start outgrowing it.
Yeah, and here's the problem with TurboTax. Even if you are keeping them up, TurboTax is really good about asking you the right questions, but you still need to know how to answer the questions, whether it's your share of personal use or depreciation lives, things like that. It tries to help you out a lot, but like they say, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. No, and it's a computer program, right? So again, if you're not sure of how you're answering or how you should answer it, yeah, they've got a support line, I believe. But again, I get nervous. Again, if it's, you know, all you have is W-2 income, the other problem is you know, you're using TurboTax. You want an accounting firm that actually is going to do tax planning. So what happens right now if you have actually, you know, you've got a W-2 job, but you're getting into a business, getting into real estate, getting into stock investing? What kind of things do you need to do, like, to make sure that you have you know, a proper foundation going forward? We get this question quite a bit, and it kind of ties into a previous question. When do you set up that corporation? Well, if you set up the corporation, you're able to go ahead and capture all the expenses that you're spending on getting that business going. And so, mm-hmm. You know, one thing I like about getting that corporation into effect as soon as possible is you're not limited to the pre-incorporation organization expenses of $5,000 and amortizing the rest over 15 years. You know, you're going, once you get that corporation, you're logging those expenses, in my opinion.
TurboTax isn't going to advise you on whether or not you should be a real estate professional or qualify for it, or cost segregation and things of that nature. And that's some of the reasons you want to have a CPA or any good accountant. I'm not going to just say the CPAs. There are plenty of really good accountants out there.
Sure. You know, one thing that you really want to find is a firm that's doing what you're doing. And it goes to everything in life. I don't want to be the test case or the learning example for a professional. And, you know, I think, you know, business taxes should be done by a business accountant. They've ran through it. They've got the experience. They know what to look for. And speaking of which, another thing that a lot of our clients are doing, are they're investing into real estate. And this one is, how do we report the sale of a rental that is owned by our 401k? And I imagine 30% by our 401k and 70% by us.
Jeff? Yeah, and we're seeing this with IRAs also and other type of qualified pension plans. But yeah, this is a case that hopefully you're reporting the rental income and losses through a partnership tax return. So the 401k is getting a Schedule K-1 as you are. Now the 401k is going to get that Schedule K-1 and just put it in the file cabinet. They don't have to do anything further with that unless they have to file Form 5500. And if you have a solo 401k, you probably know what that's a Form 5500 it's about.
And that's because obviously the money's just, there's no realization of profit or losses, right? I mean, that's
right. Because that 401k is basically an exempt organization.
Correct. I just want to make sure that our listeners were aware of that. Maybe for a future Tax Tuesday, we can get into, pros and cons of tax deferred accounts, things like that. The 70% would just be K-1 to the individuals, right?
Right. So when you sold this property, you would do a sale just as if the 30% was owned by somebody else and report it that way.
And there's some things we can do with the way that's set up. Again, that's one of the strategies that we cover throughout our educational side. If you're not familiar with Anderson, our first entry is the tax asset protection, give you a great foundation. And then we have what we call a structural implementation workshop that's it's actually based off of my book, how to run in your business effectively. Now that I got it, what do I do with it? And how do I, do corporate maintenance, things like that. Dummy that down, where a lot of people think corporate maintenance is really tedious and it's time consuming, but it's not. After that, we wanted to get you into what we call TaxWise, where Toby Mathis and a few of our accounting professionals teach you guys tax strategies. And then can't do it this year, but what we'd like to do is get you into what we call the executive retreat, which is a fun time with higher end investors that we all get together and synergize. So and then there's a nonprofit. That's a great way to decrease your tax liability. All right. So what tax strategies should a startup real estate investor be aware of and plan ahead of time? I feel like we've kind of touched on this a little, Jeff, in the fact that we've got to go ahead and do bookkeeping. We got to make sure we're getting every expense that we've spent money on getting this business going. We got to log it, right?
Correct. You need to keep it logged. You need to keep good books and records. I'll tell you, Michael, I find a lot of times I'm seeing clients that, yeah, maybe they have all their tax planning done, but they haven't really done any planning for their actual purchase of real estate. They haven't done their homework. Some are making bad purchases. Some are not making any purchases. So I think as part of the startup, part of your tax plan is going to be how you're going to go about this, what funds you're going to allocate to it, and just a whole projection of where you intend to wind up.
Yeah. I've seen so many individuals hear that they just need an LLC to invest in real estate. And it's a blanket statement. I think there's a lot of research that you can do on the online that will tell you that. But the problem is, you know, depending on your situation, I can see you investing in real estate with a C corporation in some instances, an S corporation in some instances, you know, a disregarded LLC in some instances. And getting that foundation, again, those are the type of questions that we go over the situations in the tax and AP, but also those are the type of situations we like to go over with our clients and then make sure that they are setting their foundation upright. The people who are on this conference, you guys are learning what you can write off, what you can't write off. There is just a boatload of things when you get into real estate and business. Again, it's the business tax code. You know, you're earning it, you're spending it, and then you get taxed on what's left over. But you really need to be aware of what you can actually write off, kind of the deductions.
And there's different answers on your intent. Are you renting long-term? Are you Airbnb-ing? Are you flipping properties? Or maybe some combination of that. And so your answers really depend on what your plan is.
I love the slide that Clint Coons actually photoshopped my face, and the people who've already taken tax and asset protection to know it. That's a bunch of men in swimsuits, and they're not flattering swimsuits. And it says one size does not fit all. Everybody's different. You know, one of the things that we do with our clients is we get them in with a senior strategist, and we go through the specific situation and create a customized, what we call a blueprint. And that's going to be our guiding light. But, you know, again, it's individual based. Hey, Jeff, I'm having fun. This is you're all right to teach an event with, bud.
I try.
You know what? I might have to edge Toby out of this and take this over, I tell you.
yeah.
I don't think he's going to let I might be able to get one in here and there, but he loves taxes more than I do and probably double what you do. All right. You and I talked about this earlier. I have an S corporation. When I pay myself, am I responsible for payroll taxes?
Well, if you're paying yourself, I'm assuming you're talking about some kind of compensation, salary or wages, and you're actually an employee of the S corporation. So if you're doing any kind of payroll is going to be withheld from you just like it would be for any other employee. And the S corporation is going to pick up their share of FICA, Social Security taxes, Medicare taxes. They will also probably have to pay unemployment. They may have to pay some kind of workers' compensation. So the S corporation will actually pick up those expenses. Now, one thing I want to bring up is, since we're talking about payroll and S corporations, if you have a health insurance policy through your S corporation, the S corporation needs to be paying that, not you. And by doing that, they're also going to add that income to the W-2. This will result in a deduction for that health insurance on your 1040, but you got to make sure you're doing it the right way. And if you have a payroll service, please talk to them about that and they will walk you through that.
Yeah. You know, when you have an S corporation, this is kind of, I go into probably about 45 minutes on the determination of it. Interestingly enough, correct me if I'm wrong, but the IRS gives us enough guidance to hang ourselves with. They deem it as a reasonable salary. It must be a reasonable salary.
Yeah, Toby usually says you have to be making a profit for their salary to be required and making distributions. Toby usually recommends 30% of total paid out be salary, at least 30%.
I've heard 40%, 50% from other tax professionals. Also, I almost think you look at, you do a, you know, a search on the internet, salary.com or something like that, and see what people in your same experience, length of time, location are making, and maybe paper your file that way. Funny story. I know we were running out of time, but funny story. I was actually in Dallas, Texas, and I was teaching an event. It was a 2-day event. I was by myself, and I was teaching, business owners how to run their businesses more effectively. And I was in the restaurant, and all of a sudden, a bunch of people from the same organization came in. And I mean, this is years ago, but I find out that they're all from the IRS. And this is one of those questions that I asked the agents. I said, hey, how do you figure out what a reasonable salary is in an S-Corp? I'll be damned, Jeff. You know what the three out of four people said they didn't know what I was talking about. And then the funny part on that is, you know, that's shocking. But I said, well, if you don't know the answer, what do you, how do you get the answer? What do you do? And they said, oh, we just put the caller into the queue. So, you know, this is kind of one of those interesting things that the account or the IRS doesn't even have a real firm grasp on.
Yeah, I used to say when I was at IRS, you could ask three agents the same question, get four different answers. So, but no, it's true. The reasonable salary is so subjective. There's no objective way to calculate it.
Yeah, no, it's you know, I just like having my paper, my file papered. I like to, you know, from a litigation standpoint, I like to like show how I came up with what I did and why I did it, and that I just didn't quickly put something together. If any sort of scrutiny, I like to have that file papered so I can show exactly how I came up to it, that I just didn't pull out of thin air, or that I wasn't trying to just cheat the system. I'm going to touch on this really quick. We can move off of it. How do I set up a manager-managed LLC to protect the member-managed LLC I've had since 2013? This is an interesting one because this ties back into having a holding LLC, which is one of the things we want you guys to do. You know, what we want to do is have there's some privacy aspects. Again, you know, if this is your question, please attend the conference on Saturday. And what we want to do is we want to first, you already have the LLC set up. We want it disregarded and make the member, we want to make that a Nevada or Wyoming holding LLC. And so that's how we're going to do it. Sometimes we want to look a little bit deeper. There's ways we can get your name out of public record. We can make it look like it wasn't, you weren't tied into it at all. But it takes a long time to go into the details of it. But basically what we want to do is just set it up as a disregarded entity down to a holding LLC. All right. Congratulations on the individual who sold their business and made $100,000 profit on that. Now, Jeff, I like the logic or the way that the thought pattern for this question. This is tax-wise. You start looking at all available tools, and so this individual says, hey, can I invest in real estate and offset it with some of the juicy tax benefits of owning real estate? And so I know you're going to have to get into some technical stuff with this, but go ahead.
The way your individual tax return works is most income, whether it's capital gains or passive losses, interest, dividends, W-2 wages, certain losses can offset other income. Can you invest in real estate and offset it with depreciation? You said credit. It's actually depreciation expense, and we'll talk a little later why that makes a difference. But yes, so a couple issues with this is the best way to get a big, you buy real estate, you do a cost segregation, and you'll get a lot more depreciation in that first year, that initial year. It basically accelerates it all to the front end. Now, the only problem with that is the losses from real estate are limited. They're normally limited to $25,000. Unless your AGI goes over $100,000, and then it's phased out over the next $50,000. So if you're making $150,000, you're not going to be able to take any real estate losses unless you become a real estate professional. And there's certain tests that you need to meet. If you and your spouse are working full-time jobs, it makes it very difficult to be a real estate professional. However, if one of you are not employed, it can be very easy to become that real estate professional and take that larger expense and help offset some of those capital gains.
Just got to keep a log and make sure your belt suspenders approach with it, right?
Correct. Got to keep a log. It's one of those several things that you got to keep logs of. And we really want to, you know, the capital gains thing is how much of that capital gain is going to actually be taxed and at what rates. It could be with the additional surtax, it could be 23.9%. It could be much lower, 10 or 0%. But that's a calculation we need to do before we start worrying about how do we offset that.
Yeah, this is just keeps bringing me back to please contact us before you go and sell your business. You know, there's, you know, do you sell the assets? Do you sell the business? There's a lot of ways that from a tax-wise standpoint, you could structure it to minimize that tax liability, right?
And I meant to mention that since you were selling a business, it's probably long-term capital gains. So it's going to be at that lower tax rate rather than your ordinary income rates. So yeah, that's something we need to look at. Just keep in mind any real estate you purchase and put into service needs to be done definitely before the year or then if you're going to have a cost segregation. But the closer, if you don't do the cost segregation, the closer you get to the year end, the less depreciation you're going to have to work with.
I love it. A lot of stuff goes into the tax planning. Your department does an excellent job in tax planning.
Yeah, TurboTax doesn't tell you some of this stuff.
No, but they'll tell you that you owe $100,000 a game. when you might only owe 50, garbage in, garbage out. I like that. All right, here's one. You know, there's varying opinions on the efficacy of a 529 plan. However, I think it's a great savings plan. If you don't want, if you need a forced savings plan, you can set it up. Sometimes the investments you can get a better return other ways. I set one up for my son. You know, Toby doesn't like them. I like them just because it's forced. It's put it over there, and I forget it's there. And hopefully, my son and soon to be daughter will have their college paid for. I just like paying for it over time. But the question: can I use my 529 to pay for room and board if I own my house with the mortgage? And what I guess we need to assume, Jeff, is that basically they want to pay themselves for the out of the 529 plan.
So yeah, you can do that. I don't know if it's you going to school or maybe one of your children. I don't think it really matters. So you can pay room and board to yourself out of the 529 plan. However, it cannot exceed the amount of room and board that the school, the person that's attending, would have charged.
What? So, that takes all the fun out of it.
And the other thing is, if your child is just starting school and maybe they want to end up going to graduate school or whatever, this is one of those kind of expenses where I'm just paying myself back with my own money. I'm not sure that I want to necessarily do that unless I'm close to the end and I just need to get the money out of the plan.
Yeah. But I mean, all these questions, I love it. These are all tax-wise questions. Like, you know, hey, how do we go ahead and use this and benefit us? I did get a question from Sherry. She says, soon to be daughter. Yeah, like I mentioned before, my wife and I decided that one wasn't enough. And so, yep, we're having a baby girl, like I said, in the next week. I was thinking maybe she would come during this conference, but it looks like we're going to be able to get through it, which I'm glad because I'm having a good time with you, Jeff. Who said accountants are boring, huh?
Oh, I've been with some really boring ones, so.
Yeah, but I bet they're better than most attorneys out there. I hate 99%.
Well, I was going to say, I've said terrible things about attorneys, but the guys I work with are all good guys.
That's right. It's funny, myself and Toby and Clint, we always get the oddest looks when we say we hate attorneys, but we really do. Oh my goodness. There's a few good ones out there. Is there a way to pre-plan and calculate the tax implications of the sale of a residential rental property, using depreciation recap?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's going to be based on a few factors. You already mentioned one, the depreciation previously taken, how much you're selling it for, what your basis in the property is to calculate that gain. Also, whether you know closing costs or can estimate those closing costs. So then we can get a very good idea of what the tax is going to look like from that, based on, say, how you did last year, what your income and how lined up for it last year. So we can put you in a proper tax bracket for that sale.
Awesome. I love tax planning. All right. I actually did a little, when I saw this question, I have a self-storage business in Virginia. I'm looking to expand and purchase another facility. Congratulations on being a successful business, by the way, another facility in Tennessee. What is the ideal structure I should use for this business and real estate investing? I got somewhat of a picture in here. You know, this also, we can use this for assisted living facilities. We can use it for veterinarian businesses, doctors, dentists. Why I like doing the active side of the business and the corporation is from the tax code. We get, from a business standpoint, we get more deductions. And I also like having the actual locations owned in a separate LLC So, and what I basically is outlined here is I want that corporation to lease the premise, or you know, there's some sort of arrangement, but I want the actual physical locations owned in individual LLCs in this state where they're at, and then also have them disregarded down to the Wyoming LLC for that charging order protection. So that's the structure for self-storage. It's for, you know, I like to look at it maybe even from a veterinarian or a dentist. A lot of my dentists, they buy their own building. Unfortunately, what they do is they go ahead and just put it in their own name. From a liability standpoint, someone slips and falls, trips and gets hurt. You know, now, you know, the entire practice is at risk. But I also like to be able to say, hey, you know, what? Why don't you sell the practice, the active business, and retain the residential or the actual property, the locations? Because any new business owner, there's going to be goodwill with those locations. And so you're able to still lease it out and make money on that, on your practice, even though you sold the active side of the business. I just like it from a retirement standpoint. And so I'll take that one, Jeff. Any insight?
Yeah, Tennessee has a quirk. They have the franchise and excise tax. It's the franchise tax is 0.25% of the net worth of the company, and the excise tax is 6.5% of the Tennessee taxable income. There is an exception to that. It's called the FONS, the family owned, blah, blah, blah. Sorry, I can't remember the rest of it. It basically says that if the entity is at least owned 95% by family members, it will not be subject to the franchise and excise tax. So again, this is one of those things that you can't go about willy-nilly. You really need to plan on how you're setting something like this up in order to save some money. I usually see people tent property in Tennessee that can't use this exemption. They're paying thousands of dollars a year to Tennessee.
Yeah, good catch on that for sure. Property aggregation, what is it and what are the reasons to do it or not to do it?
Property aggregation is primarily used with real estate professionals. Due to the rules for real estate professionals, you have to have so many hours of material participation in each property, and it has to be more than half of all other services you have. So with that, you can only qualify one property as a real estate professional. What property aggregation allows you to do is combine all of those properties. Say you own 10 properties, you combine them into one activity. It's still going to show up on your tax return as individual rentals, but they're all treated for that material participation as a real estate professional as one activity. It's actually an election you look at each and every year that you're a real estate professional. So it's very important for that reason. If you only have one property and you're claiming real estate professional, we had somebody who had a very expensive commercial property. They didn't need to do the property aggregation. But if you have multiple properties and want the real estate professional so you can deduct more on your personal return, then this aggregation is very important.
Yes, absolutely. You know, especially like you said, get that real estate professional and then get those benefits from being a real estate professional. You know, one of the things I put in there, so the difference between a tax deduction and a tax credit, everybody needs to understand this. So a tax deduction, Jeff?
A tax deduction reduces your taxable income.
Yep.
A tax credit reduces your actual tax. And a quick example of that is like the electric car. People were buying Teslas and they got a $7,500 credit. That credit actually went against your tax. It was not a deduction from your income. It was a deduction from your tax. Anything else that like depreciation is an expense. It's not a credit. There's a number of credits. There's the renewable energy credits, different research. And research and development is kind of interesting because it can be either a credit or an expense. It's whatever you choose it to be.
Which do you like better?
I like the credits.
Me too.
about the only time I question it is when I may not be able to use that credit in its entirety, because you may have heard of non-refundable credits versus refundable credits.
Correct.
And a non-refundable credit means if you don't know any tax, you don't get that credit. It may be carried over, it may not. It depends on the specific credit. So that, yeah, I do like credits, and they usually work out fairly well.
Yeah, I think majority of the time, yeah, but you got to be careful on if you're able actually to use it or not. Again, that's tax planning. And then I'll go first, but some of my favorite tax deductions as a business owner, as a an investor, someone who's lifelong learning, I love the educational deductions. I love, you know, they're through a corporation. I do like the Section 105B, medical care reimbursements. If you have a corporation, I think I get a lot of thank you notes when people unfortunately have had a medical expense out of the blue. I think that that's, you know, at least you're able to write it off through the corporation income. And, you know, the charitable deduction also, you know, I think it should be stronger, but, you know, it is what it is. And I think it's, you know, number one, you're doing charity. I like that the government kind of partners with you on that. So what are some of your favorite tax deductions?
I do like the charitable deduction. Unfortunately, it's not very effective on a corporation because the amount you can deduct is so terribly low. But on an individual or on a pass-through, it's more effective. I like the bonus depreciation that we've seen with the cost segregation. It gives us a lot more deductions. And the reimbursement for expenses such as administrative office or for mileage, things of that nature, that where we're not generating income for the individual. And also for the corporate meetings in the home. I do like that one too.
Oh, the 280A. Yep. I love those aha moments. We do a lot of in-person classes, and you mentioned that you're able to write off your personal, you know, or you write off income from your corporation, you know, if you rent your personal residence for 14 days a year, and people are saying, no, that can't be right. Or you don't have to claim the income. You know, what? Are you kidding me? I love that part of it. I love it. Yep. Yeah, that's one of my favorites too, for sure. And not very well known.
No, not at all. And, you know, there are certain expenses that just aren't being handled right. The corporate office is a big one that people will rent out their home to their company. And that's such a bad idea when they could just reimburse it and have no tax consequences to them personally.
Yeah. In the past, you know, I believe you and Toby have gone over the home office deduction, how to do it right, and, you know, how to get the most bang for the buck, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. People should go ahead and review, you know, the past podcast, or again, you know, come to the, or sign up and attend the, you know, Tax Ask Protection this Saturday. We're going to be going over a majority, if not all of these and more with the, on the Tax and AP. Sign up and attend it. And then we're also rolling out two new products, you know, that we're including into a package. So it's going to be pretty awesome. Jeff, on scrolling through some of the questions, you've got them in front of you. Any of these that you want to cover really quick?
I don't know, Michael. I've been concentrating so hard on what you were talking about that.
Let's pull a few. What kind of documents do we need to do every year for LLCs? I kind of ad-libbed a little bit. Most states are going to require you to go ahead and file an annual report. Some states are perpetual or you don't have to do it. You know, you do have to pay a resident agent fee. Why that's important is we want to go ahead and keep your name, your address out of public record. A resident agent is there to accept service of process on behalf of the actual business itself. I see this all the time with other companies and other attorneys who set up businesses. They'll go ahead and, in order to save $150, they'll list the individual's address down there. No, pay the $150 a year. I amateurize it over 12 months if it makes you feel better. But those are the type of fees, the annual report to the Secretary of State of the state you're in. And then also go ahead and you know, just pay that RA fee, the resident agent fee, so that you keep your name out of public record. Oh, a lot of well wishes for my baby. I appreciate that, guys. A lot of what I call family members, members of Anderson that have been along with us for a long time. Ah, someone learned Corin from a past in-person event, and they say they use it quite often. I like that.
Somebody asked, why do you like tax credits better than tax deductions? A credit is worth the same amount to everybody. It doesn't depend on what it's worth, doesn't depend on your tax bracket, or because it is a straight reduction of your taxes. And that's one of the reasons I do like it better. There's one question, which states have a tax on LLCs similar to California? California is, I'm going to use the word, most egregious, and that they're so daggone expensive. A lot of, I'm not going to say a lot, but there are other states. I know Kentucky has one that's, I think it's $175. And some of the states in the Northeast have returns that have fees of $100 to $200. New York is actually one of the cheaper ones. I wanted to say they're like $25. But the $800 is a lot of money, especially if you have multiple LLCs and having to pay that every year.
I think it's a cost of doing business. I mean, you'll kick yourself if you don't pay it and then get sued and you put all your eggs in one basket, huh? It's like, no one likes paying insurance, but it's good to separate those out in a way. And I'm what they call a frugal individual. You know, there is some balancing. There's some things we can do also to, like you said, kind of manage that. There's some strategies that we can use to get around each $800 fee. Here's one. Can a single member LLC be recharacterized with the IRS as a partnership? I thought this was a funny one, Jeff, because it does depend, right?
The only way it would be recharacterized as a partnership, if it was no longer a single member LLC, that is, you added a second member.
You gotta have somebody else or another entity or another individual join in for it to be a partnership. And then what would you do, an 8832?
It wouldn't hurt to do that. I'm not sure that you're required to do that because the partnership is more or less a default for an LLC with multiple members.
And just doing
it. But it would probably be a good idea to do that.
Yeah, and then just file the tax return as a partnership tax return.
Somebody asked, can you roll an old 529 to an HSA or existing Roth? No, because they're actually different IRS codes. There are some exemptions to getting the 529 money out. One of the examples is the education was paid for by non-taxable scholarship. Then you can pull the money out that wasn't used. And there are some other exceptions. So it's not penalized or taxed.
Got to make sure like kind accounts, right?
Correct.
Okay. Hey, you got some kudos. Someone had said, hey, I was there. You know, this is regarding TurboTax. I was there 3 years ago during TurboTax. And let me tell you, the answer is no. You know what? We can say it till we're blue in the face. But the big one is not learning from your own experience, learning from other people's experience.
Sure.
I was one of those kids. I didn't want to burn my hand on the stove. If I saw my brother burn his hand, hey, I didn't want to do that. There's a lot of great questions here. You know.
Yeah, these guys kill us every other Tuesday, Michael.
But this, we would have been going for an hour and a half almost, and this has just gone by super fast, and it's been a ton of fun. What's the best approach to put my personal vehicle under my business? My wife is a realtor and has established an LLC as an S corporation. We have a C corporation established. I'm going to say that, you know, we need to do a cost benefit analysis. Do you drive it a lot? Do we not? Do we own the vehicle? Do we just go ahead and take mileage reimbursements? These are all the questions that we really need to analyze going forward. No one size fits all. Again, it's, you know, sometimes it's better just to take the mileage reimbursement. If you have a Tesla, you're probably making money on the deal. Sometimes it's better to take the actual expense method. We do go over that again, you know, in the tax and AP in more in depth.
Yeah. Here's a question. I have rental property in a personal name. And what kind of structure is needed? I have a mortgage with them. The mortgage doesn't matter so much anymore. Correct, Michael, that they pretty much told the banks that the LLC, moving a property into an LLC is not going to affect the mortgage.
I'm finding more and more that the banks are adapting to it. Now, here's my issue. Back in 2006, God, that makes me feel old. What's that, 14 years ago? Oh, my gosh. I feel way too young to be talking 14 years ago. The banks were starting to be okay with it, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, they got skittish. And, you know, instead of moving a property directly from your name into the LLC, we use a lot of times the land trust. Just go ahead and put that in there so we don't have to deal with it. I got two sets of clients. One set of clients, we look at what kind of transfer fees are going to be at the county level. some of my clients to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to take it directly from my own name, deed it into the name of the LLC. Other clients, you know, say, hey, because of, you know, there's a chance that the bank might give us a hassle, let's go ahead and use that revocable land trust, which, you know, in all 50 states, we can use them. It's just a revocable trust. Sometimes we get in trouble because people don't understand it. But if you just say it's a revocable trust, like your living trust, then they start understanding a little bit better. And so there's a solution in this. And sometimes it entails using a land trust. Sometimes it entails just going and deeding the property into an LLC. So the factors that we need to look at: transfer taxes, due on sale. We also want to look at the privacy issue. With the land trust, we're able to go ahead and, you know, keep our name out of public record. You know, again, being a recovering litigation attorney, keeping your name out of public record is pretty important.
Yeah, I agree with that, Michael. But having anything like a rental property in your personal name is fraught with danger. You got to get some kind of liability protection, and insurance, even an umbrella policy, is not going to do it for you, because you basically have this hostile property that's subject to lawsuit embed with all of your other assets.
Oh, I just got another hello from Crystal. Hey, Crystal. Gosh, I think she's been a client for 15 years at least. Oh my gosh. It's so great to see everybody here. Love it. It's like a family reunion for me here. Guys, you know, consider signing up for that tax and AP. I encourage everybody to attend it. There's so much. I've created the presentation for it. I know what's going to be in it. It's going to be of value. And also, I know what Carl's presenting. We synergize really well. The people who are attracted to Anderson, it's a different type of person. It's a different type of business. They want to, you know, advance their life. They want to sacrifice for a better future. And so we give you the tools to do that. And so please attend it. I'm giving everyone a free entrance into this. We know you guys are the ones that eat top ramen to save for an investment. You guys have sacrificed for a better future for you and your family. We really want to show you how to protect it, not only from lawsuits, but also taxes, and then be able to pass it down to the future generations, or at least somewhere where you designate it, not the government. And it's been my pleasure to join Jeff. And really, personally, I'd like to wish you guys the best of success in all you do. And please get a hold of us if there's something we can do for you. And look forward to seeing a lot of you guys on the Tax and AP event on Saturday. Jeff, any parting words?
No, but I'll see everybody in 2 weeks.
What are you, taking them all to Hawaii?
Oh, by the way, I won the lottery. This is my last 2 weeks. No, I'm just kidding.
You're everyone here. Oh, that's fantastic.
I couldn't quit.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Awesome, guys. Please join us on Saturday. And, if you have questions that are particular, or you need some planning, you can join our Platinum division and sign up for a strategy session. So, hey, guys, great being with you tonight, and hope everyone has a great evening. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.